Genesis 2112 Productions presents Irreplaceable, from the collection Stories from Beneath the Surface, written by Sully Daniel Johnson, copyright 2018 by Renaissance Productions. Read by the author along with Janelle Johnson and Jada Johnson.
He looked at the bright lights overhead. He was surrounded by several people in white gowns and surgical masks. They were looking down at him in a menacing semicircle, seemingly preventing all avenues of escape.
"Try to relax now, Mr. Adams," one of the doctors said calmly. "In a few moments, I want you to begin counting backwards from 10.
The man continued adjusting buttons on the nearby instruments.
"Don't worry, the procedure is painless and completely safe."
Anxiety now radiated out from his center, causing his extremities to feel slightly numb. He tried to speak, but his voice did not break the persistent hum of the room. His throat was too dry. He tried to speak again.
"Stop! Stop!"
he tried to say.
"I've changed my mind!"
He tried to articulate the words, but nothing came out. The doctor continued calmly, working on their instruments, not hearing him. Perhaps they did not notice him. He needed to get their attention. A nurse bent over him and gripped him firmly by the arms now.
"Come now, Mr. Adams. You need to remain calm and let us do our job,"
she said gently but firmly.
"If you keep moving, we'll need to restrain you."
Norman tried to get up, but soon noticed that he was bound to the bed by large straps.
"No! No, you don't understand,"
he tried to say. He wriggled frantically now, trying to escape. The nurse cinched the restraints tighter.
"No, please stop!"
His voice came out clearly now. "Don't be silly, Mr. Adams. You're overreacting," the doctor said, as he placed the respirator over his mouth. Norman wriggled more frantically now, and his voice came out in muffled shouts. He held his breath now. He held it as long as he could, until he felt like his chest would explode.
"It's no use, Mr. Adams. You're being unreasonable. This procedure is inevitable. You can't change it now."
Norman could no longer hold his breath, so he tried to release it slowly and to take shallow breaths. He began to feel very drowsy. He tried to keep himself awake. He tried to thrash, but his body was becoming very tired. He could no longer move it. He tried to keep thinking, but could no longer focus on anything. The last thing he remembered saying was,
"No!"
Darkness surrounded him now. He floated in the darkness for what seemed a very long time. He could barely make out far-off voices and movements. He now slowly began to calm down.
"I suppose they're right,"
he thought. The fear was gone now. He had been overreacting. In a few moments, he would wake up in his new body. He would be young, and Clarice would be there. They could do all the things they had never had a chance to do before. He would no longer be strange. The more he thought about it, the more he began to smile.
"Yes, what a fool I have been,"
he thought. And now his eyes began to flutter open slowly. The light was a little bright at first, but not painful. He was back in the room, surrounded by the doctors and nurses. They now had removed their masks and stood there smiling at him.
"Welcome back, Mr. Adams," the doctor said. "Welcome to your new life."
The doctor raised his arm and took his pulse.
"This may seem a little weird for the first time, as you get used to your new body, but the sensation will pass quickly enough."
Norman looked down at his body. There was no melanoma on his hands. He was young. He began to feel a surge of exhilaration.
"Like to see the new you?"
a young nurse said, smiling.
She held up a small mirror.
Norman felt a surge of excitement as a young man of some 20 years looked back at him. It was a face that was at once familiar and alien to him. It was the face of years gone by, and with it came the memories of years gone by.
"Did I ever look so good?" he mumbled.
The nurse smiled at him the way women once did. The sensation filled him with a long-forgotten sense of vitality.
"Now try to move your arms a little," the doctor said. "Take it slowly at first."
Norman now thought about Clarice and began to scan the room. She was not there.
"Where's my wife?" he said.
"That's good, Mr. Adams. Now let's try to move your legs."
"Where's my wife? Where's Clarice?"
Norm said more forcibly.
"You're doing exceptionally well," the doctor said, smiling.
"Isn't he doing well?" he said, turning to the nurse. She nodded and smiled.
Norman began to grow frantic now.
Why don't you listen to me?
He shouted. They continued to smile, ignoring him. Then he heard a voice that he knew very well.
I feel fine, it said. You mean like this? It said.
The voice was so very familiar, but somehow different. Now Norman watched as his arm began to move. He tried to stop it, but it did not respond. The doctor continued talking, but his voice seemed to fade into the background. Norman's body began to move more, following the doctor's commands. Norman began to feel slight panic as he watched helplessly, his body responding to the doctor's every command.
This is not me, he shouted. I'm not in control.
The scene continued to play out in front of him, reducing him to a spectator in his own life. He watched placidly for a few moments, becoming resigned to the situation that it had developed. Then he remembered Clarice and was filled with a new surge of commitment.
No!
He shouted.
This is my body, my life.
He tried to get up. He began to feel very light now and seemed to be floating slowly upwards. He floated slowly up above the doctors. He continued to float slowly to the ceiling. He hovered above the doctors and nurses. As he looked down, he saw a person on the bed where he had been. It looked like him, but it was not him.
How long will it take for the disorientation to pass? The body asked.
It will be a few hours, the doctor said. Your mind needs to get used to the new body.
No,
Norman shouted frantically.
That's not me. I'm over here.
The body propped itself up now on one arm.
I feel a little better now, it said.
Don't rush, Mr. Adams, the doctor said. We'll have you out of here in about an hour or so.
No,
Norman shouted frantically.
You don't understand. It's not me. Not me.
Norman waved his arms frantically, trying to get the attention of the doctors.
You've got the wrong person there. You need to put me back in my body. The procedure didn't work.
Norman felt a sudden jerk and opened his eyes. The room was dark. He rolled over in his bed. Clarice was there, hunched slightly over him.
Are you okay, Norman?
She said.
You were jerking and mumbling.
Norman paused for a moment as a mixture of intense and contradictory emotions flowed through him.
Norman, are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. Just a bad dream.
Clarice paused for a moment, assessing the situation.
You don't have to.
She began and paused.
You don't have to go through the whole transformation right now if you don't want to.
Clarice looked at him for a few moments, then lay back down. Norman paused for a moment, filled with relief, but soon his old familiar anxieties rose up. There was something in her voice, he thought. He had sensed it for a while. It had been building, but now it was clear. There was something in her intonation, something in her hesitancy. He could not put his finger on exactly what it was, but he knew what it meant. He was losing her. She fully expected him to put off the procedure again, and she did not care. She was moving away from him, moving on to her new life. Norman felt a pang of fear in the hollow of his gut as this possibility impacted him. Norman lay there for a long time, thinking about what he knew he needed to do. After a few minutes of trying to ignore his anxiety and listening to Clarice's rhythmic breathing, he decided to get up. He walked out of the immaculate but sparsely furnished room and gently closed the door behind him. He walked across the acrylic floor and opened the adjoining room. Stepping inside, his anxiety dissipated as he switched on the table lamp. It illuminated the workbench with a small pool of amber light, leaving the rest of the room concealed by darkness. He quietly sat down in front of a workbench littered with hundreds of gears, springs, and metal housings of myriad sizes. There was an odd type of order to all this that only Norman knew. Only he could see the mechanisms from a bygone age as anything more than merely junk. He sat down, picking up a small metal device. He soon began tinkering in the dim light, intent on the small collection of interworking gears. He peered at the device through a large magnifying glass mounted on a movable arm. He gripped the sprocket with fine-tip pliers while he twisted a slender screwdriver. He hummed an old forgotten tune as he worked. The bad dreams that weighed so heavily on his mind were gone now. They were set aside for a moment, replaced by the more immediate reality
of precision adjustments and scanning hundreds of tiny brass gears to find just the right one.
64 tomorrow, he thought. I'll be 64.
He sat back down in his chair a moment, lifting his eyes from the intensity of his task. Stretching a tired neck, he thought.
I may possibly be the oldest man alive,
he chuckled, a little to himself.
Just an old fart,
he muttered, then returned back to the pool of light and the intensity of his task. He propped a few gears and tinkered with the spring.
Well, I guess it's as ready as it'll ever be,
he thought. He picked it up and wound the brass spring in the back of the machine. He set it down on the table. The flywheel began to hum. The brass cylinder slowly began to move, and a familiar tune began to fill the room. It had a soft but vibrant pitch as the metal bars began to pluck at irregular intervals. The old man smiled. He recognized the song.
Au clair de la lune,
he muttered. He hummed along a few bars with the music box.
Finally, something older than me, but still works,
he thought. Everyone thought he was crazy. He loved old music boxes. It was crazy, but he loved everything about them. The smell of the old wood mingled with the machine oil, the artistry of the boxes, the rich tones of the wood finish. Mostly, however, he loved the sound.
There's something genuine about the tone,
he would say, in defense of his obsession. Pretty much everyone shook their heads and laughed at him. Everyone, except Sarah, that is. Sarah actually enjoyed them, just as she enjoyed being with him. Maybe it was because she was his daughter. No, it was far more than this. None of his other children treated him anything like she did.
Bunch of parasites,
he mumbled. They only came around when they wanted something. He did not have much left to offer, and he had not seen any of them in years. Sarah was a rarity, as scarce as these steadily disappearing music boxes. She delighted in his stories and his odd way of rambling on, jumping from one subject to the other. He followed some predefined logic that only the saga of a full and long life could make any sense of. She told him once that he was the only person that she knew that talked the way he did. It relaxed her, she said.
I guess that comes with age, he thought.
He remembered his grandfather telling him long ago that people's priorities change as they become older.
I guess I've changed a little, but I don't know how,
he thought.
I guess the biggest change is that I no longer want things like I once did.
I can't wait for you forever,
Clarice told him. She used to tease him, humming that old Beatles song.
Norman, if you don't take the transformation sometime soon, you'll be like that old coot in the song,
she told him, once expressing her frustration. He loved Clarice. She was different than all the rest, too. Not chasing one thrill after another, saying words that had all the right tones but lacked any real feeling, like some annoying NLP training infomercial actor. Perhaps it was because she had a chance to grow old too. He was so lucky to have found her. No one else in the world was close to his age, even back then. No one wanted to be with him. But like all people and all things, the torrent of society had begun to change her. It had morphed her like the weathering of a raging river on canyon walls. It was just a matter of time now before he lost her. She would go away, just like all the others. Then he would be alone again. Maybe he should just do the transformation. How bad could it be? Millions of other people had already done it, many of them several times. The doctor assured him he would not lose any of his precious memories. He would be the same person as before, just in a different body, a younger body. He took the music mechanism out of the box and held it up. He watched intently as the brass drum turned and plucked the steel bars one by one.
But who knows for sure,
he mumbled. A bright light flickered above his head for a few moments before it illuminated the room with fluorescence.
Norman?
He heard the familiar voice.
Norman, what are you doing here with the lights out? It's 4:15.
Clarice!
He said, turning around.
I was just working on this new box I got at the auction last week.
Oh, Norman, why you want to peel out with that old junk is beyond me.
He looked up at her, wondering if he should answer.
It's so much easier just to get a digital device,
she said.
No one will know the difference when it's in the box.
I will. I'll know,
he said.
Well, I guess that makes sense to me, at least,
she said. He smiled.
Oh, Clarice, now I know why I married you. You can always make me smile.
Come on, you old coot. It's time to go to bed. We need to see the doctor tomorrow, remember?
Norman had forgotten. Tomorrow was the pre-op for the transformation. She took him by the hand, and they went off to bed. At the doctor's office, the doctor was pleased and confident. His office was filled with awards and pictures, ranging from mountain climbing to martial arts. After talking to Clarice about what it was like to climb Half Dome, he got into the specifics of the procedure. The procedure will be rather simple, he began. It will only take about an hour, and it's painless. He looked back at the couple, reassuring them. You will be sedated, but this is only to ease the transfer of your current memories. It can feel a little weird.
Is there any risk?
Asked Clarice. No more than the normal risks of anesthesia, he said. Once he is under, his current memories will be merged to the last backup of his memories. The data will then be verified for correctness and integrity. Once this is complete, it is transferred into the clone. The data is then verified in the new body to ensure that it is seated properly. If no problems are detected, the sedation is turned off and the subject wakes up in 5 minutes or so.
What happens if the transfer does not happen correctly?
Clarice asked.
This almost never happens, but if it does, the procedure is simply repeated, and the second time it takes.
There have been no recorded persistent transmission failures for the last 10 years. The equipment has so many fail-safes built into it. The worst that can happen is the procedure may take 15 minutes longer. Clarice looked with satisfaction.
It seems pretty foolproof,
she said, turning to Norman.
What happens to my body? Norman asked.
After the procedure is complete and tested positive, the sedation on the old body is increased until it slips into a coma and it expires.
How do you...
Norman began uncertainly. How do we know that all of you made it over? The doctor asked, anticipating the question. We run a comparison to the brain patterns before the transformation to those after. He hesitated only a moment. I know this is often a cause of anxiety, but this is the well-established procedure. Don't worry, Mr. Adams. Nothing can go wrong. Clarice left to go to a hang gliding class, and Norman returned to his workshop. There was a sudden knock on the door. Norman got up from his desk and found a woman standing there, silently looking at him.
Sarah!
He smiled. She hugged the old man, and they went inside.
So great to see you, Sarah.
Good to see you too, Dad,
she said.
How's the clock coming along?
She asked.
He looked at her, confused for a moment. And then remembered.
Oh, the clock. I finished that last year.
I'm sorry,
she said, genuinely concerned.
Has it been that long?
No worries,
he said optimistically.
Come over here. Let me show you what I've been working on,
he said excitedly, moving on to the next room. She slowly followed and watched as he sat down at the workbench.
Listen,
he said, turning the crank on the music box. The gears whirled into life. The metallic music filled the air.
It's beautiful,
she said, her eyes sparkling with that excitement that so delighted Norman.
Daddy?
He paused and looked at her.
Aren't you afraid of, well, you know, death?
The word was harder to say than she had thought. Her eyes began to glisten a little. Norman spotted this right away and held her hand.
I'm not going to die, Pumpkin,
he said, smiling. She paused a moment.
I'm serious, Dad.
Her eyes began to water.
I don't want to lose you.
She pulled away and turned, hiding her face from him. After a pause, she said,
Why don't you do it?
I am,
he said confidently. She slowly turned around, wiping the tears from her face.
No, you won't,
she said.
You always say that. I bet you're thinking right now of another excuse to put it off until next year.
His eyes wavered for a moment, trying to find a place to hide them. Then he smiled.
You know me too well, Sarah,
he said warmly.
Guilty as charged.
Why put it off again? If you keep doing that, one day it will soon be too late. Clarice has already just about given up on you.
I know.
Then why? Why not just go through with it this time? It will solve everything. What is it? The procedure is safe and has been done millions of times. What are you afraid of?
They sat in silence for a few moments. Then he began slowly.
Pumpkin, don't worry. I won't die. I won't leave you. I'm not afraid of the procedure. I'm not afraid it'll fail. How could it? Everyone that I have known has gone through it without a glitch. It must have a 100% success rate. I believe if, when I do it, it will also be a success.
What is the problem then?
She said with frustration.
That's difficult to describe,
he said. She let out a breath of frustration.
How do I know it will be really me?
He said quickly.
What do you mean? You're not one of those born-agains, are you?
Of course not. You know me. I don't even believe in God.
Well then, I'm officially confused,
she said.
Well, I mean, who really knows what happens anyways?
You're not helping much to explain,
she said in frustration. He paused and thought for a moment.
Remember years ago, my old dog, Max?
Yes,
she said.
Remember after he died and Clarice had him recycled?
You mean he seemed different to you after that? Is that what this is about?
No, Sarah. He was just the same as before.
She looked at him confused.
But there was no way to talk to him to find out if it really was him or just a good copy.
But people can talk, and they always tell us that it really is them,
she said with emphasis.
That's true,
he said.
But still, how do we know that it's really them and not a good copy?
Now you're not making any sense.
I mean, when my computer goes south, I have to reinstall the system. After it is fixed, it performs pretty much the same way as it did before. But there's no way of knowing what was lost.
But people are not computers. They come back with the same memories and character traits as before,
she said.
A person can always look the same as those around him, but it's only the person himself who knows if it's really him. How can he remember what he's left behind? How would he even know if anything has changed?
His voice now began to rise up a little.
How do I know if what really comes back is really me, or not just a good copy of me? Maybe I will really die, and this clone will just take my place.
Norman noticed that Sarah looked at him a little stunned. He had gotten a little more excited than he had wanted to. He apologized, and a few minutes of awkward conversation followed. She left soon after, and he sat at his workbench, silently staring at the music box.
It looks like I better go through with it,
he thought.
Everyone must think I'm crazy. It makes no logical sense, not even to me. But still, something in my head keeps screaming at me not to do it.
The door creaked silently and pulled his attention out of the ocean of his mind and back to the small room. His heart lifted as he saw Clarice standing at the door smiling.
Well, time to put your toys away,
she said. He looked at her a little confused.
It's 3 o'clock.
Norman paused a moment, allowing his mind to return back to the routine of his life. Oh yes, he remembered. Our walk. They walked through the well-groomed park of the housing complex. Clarice knew him well. He had been the only person close to her that she had ever met. They understood each other. For so many years, he stood by her as she aged and passed up so many opportunities to recycle his body. She had no choice then, having a rare neurological condition that made the transfer to a new body too risky to attempt. But that was then, and this was now. Technology has a way of finding the correct solution for every problem. It had now been a year since she had her transformation. She loved Norman and always said that she was only doing it for herself. She was not ready to die. This would change nothing, she told him. She would be with him for as long as they lived. Yet watching them walk hand in hand down the street, the disproportion of this solution was rather clear, even to the least astute passerby. They were both old once, but now she looked more like his daughter than his wife. They both tried to ignore this, But society around them would always insist on its irregularity. Her love for him was strong. She held an immense gratitude for the sacrifice made for her at a time when no one else would. But society was surrounding them and kept insisting that Norman was no longer the right man for her. The world that surrounded them did not do this directly or with reasoned arguments. It happened subtly and consistently, like the dripping of a leaky faucet on the enamel of an aged sink. Deep down, she knew their relationship could no longer endure. Norman realized it the day she decided to undergo the transformation. As they walked, Norman got the usual stares from people who passed by.
"Don't worry, Clarice,"
he said, trying to build an air of defensiveness.
"This time, I'll go through with it."
She paused for a moment, but did not look at him directly.
"I know, dear. I know you will."
They arrived at the park and sat down on the bench.
"No, really, Clarice."
He sat and looked at her.
"Clarice, I love you more than life. I know I've been a pain in the ass. I've been acting like a senile old man."
She looked at him, forcing a smile, but avoiding his gaze.
"I know, Clarice. You're getting tired of me, and you need to get on with your life. I'm just an old man now, and you need someone young who can share the excitement of life with you."
She continued to avoid his gaze. She tried to say something, but only awkward bumbles came out.
"It's okay, Clarice. I understand. I won't try to hold you back. I love you. I want you to be happy."
She began to relax a little now and forced herself to look at him.
"Clarice, please tell me what's on your mind. We never talk anymore."
Something in the sincerity of Norman's words stirred her heart. Or was it rather the fragile look in his eyes as he realized that he was losing her? This unexpected look sparked an irrational reaction into motion.
"Honestly, Norman, I don't know what your problem is."
Norman looked at her, but remained silent.
"I'm sorry, Clarice. You're right. I've been irrational. But I do love you, and I mean to go through with it this time."
Clarice paused, as if struck by a missile. Then her eyes began to water. Norman looked at her concernedly. He moved closer to her.
"I'm sorry, dear. I love you. I don't want to lose you."
She looked at him intently, as priorities in her mind were quickly reshuffled.
"Will you do it? Do you promise?"
she said with emphasis.
Norman's heart came into life as he quickly understood he had been given another chance.
"Yes,"
he said, putting his arm around her and holding her close.
"I'm sorry, dear,"
she said.
"It's just I never want to lose someone I love so much again,"
she said.
"I can't go through that again."
"Don't worry, Clarice. I've made my mind up about this, and I will go through with it," he said with commitment.
"It's the best thing for us, Norman,"
she said,
filled with hope and resolve.
"Then we could be together forever. I love you, and I want to do things with you, share things with you. I want to be able to do all those things we missed out on."
She took his hand in hers and looked into his eyes.
"I love you too, Norman."
The two kissed with passion for the first time in a long time. Norman finally felt free. He knew what he would do. Norman lay on his back, looking up at the bright lights, then turned his head to the side. He looked over at Clarice, and they exchanged an embrace with their eyes. He was happy, and she was happy. He looked up at the doctor and the two nurses who stood above him. They smiled, reassuring. He smiled back, confident now. Anxiety began to rise up slowly as he considered the unexpected.
"There is never any way of knowing for sure,"
he thought.
"The only way to know is to go through it."
The doctor placed a respirator on his face. Norman held his breath for a moment, still uncertain.
"You're going through with it this time,"
he said to himself, as images of Clarice and Sarah filled his mind. He took a deep breath. He began to feel dizzy, and the darkness surrounded him. The man opened his eyes and was surrounded by doctors. Clarice sat across the room, waiting expectantly.
"Hello, Mr. Adams," the doctor said.
"Hello," he said.
You have been listening to Irreplaceable. written by Suli Daniel Johnson. Irreplaceable is a short story from the Stories from Beneath the Surface collection. This and other publications are available at genesis2112.com or on Kindle under Suli Daniel Johnson. Screenplay versions of this and other writings are available through special request at genesis2112.com.